The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
We welcome you back. Final hour of the program, and great to have you with us on this Wednesday night. We started the show with, obviously, the news of Nick Saban testing positive for COVID. He'll miss Saturday's Iron Bowl. There are so many other games that have been called off, including Cincinnati, which was such a big story last night in the CFP rankings. Always delighted to welcome back to the show Mike Oresko, the commissioner of the AAC. And Commissioner, it's great to have you on. I know you were probably really intrigued by what happened last night, but disappointed by the news today. Good afternoon.
Always great to be with you. Thank you. And yes, well, first of all, I would like to send my best wishes and the best wishes of our conference to Nick Saban. And we hope that his symptoms resolve very quickly and that he's totally fine. And we just felt very bad. Obviously, we all did when we heard the news. So we just want to send him our absolute best wishes.
Thank you for saying that, and I'm sure. Let's hope. Yeah, I mean, Coach. Yeah, I mean, the coach has been through this. It was negative, and now he's going through it again. And Commissioner, it just seems like every day more bad news comes in on that front. And let's talk about Cincinnati having to miss the Temple game first, because you know this is a club that's been spectacular, and every game matters.
Yes, and I didn't mean not to, you know, proceed to answer the question, you know, Paul. It's a tough time for us because we know that the virus is around. We know that it's more prevalent than it was. And, you know, we have, too, a lot of urban campuses, and we have a lot of players from the general area, and they visit, you know, family and friends. And unfortunately, that's where it typically, you know, has been coming from, you know, outside the facility. And unfortunately, Cincinnati and Temple both have a COVID issue right now that unfortunately is going to take them a couple of weeks to resolve. And for Temple, that's it. You know, this would have been their last game, so they're going to shut down for the year. And they've had a tough time anyway. They've been depleted now for quite a while, even though they have been able to play. In Cincinnati's case, obviously they have to, you know, recover and hope to be ready for Tulsa, a huge game, you know, on the 12th. The 5th would have been, you know, a makeup date. But as you know, Paul, again, sometimes it just takes 2 weeks with all the quarantines, as well as the isolation period and the cardiac workup that you have to do. It's hit us a little harder. We've still been able, fortunately, to play, you know, the vast majority of our games. You know, we've played essentially 41 out of the 44 conference games. That's 93%. But it's hitting harder now because we obviously lost the Houston-Tulsa game as well. And that one, you know, could be made up if neither is in the championship game on the 19th. But it's very likely that Tulsa will be, at least at this point. And, you know, we lost USF and Navy, and that may or may not be made up on the 19th. The Navy is technically still in contention. So, yeah, it's been a problem. It's, you know, again, it's going to be with us. I think our schools probably now, or our teams rather, are pretty much on lockdown and just hoping to get through the next 3 weeks. You know, Paul, it's interesting. You know, this is really typically the end of the season, but as you know, it feels like the middle of the season because we're going through, you know, later into December, and then of course, you know, the potential bowl games. But it's definitely an issue for us.
Commissioner, I'll get to the Cincinnati dilemma in a minute with the CFP, but I do want to ask you, because I had a caller ask me earlier, you know, is this all worth it? And I really I feel like it is, but I wanted to think about it. And you are someone we've had this conversation with countless times. You're thoughtful and certainly you know, conscious of every aspect of the health issues, but you can't avoid the reality of where this virus is, and there's literally no telling where it's going to be a week or two or three from now after this weekend with Thanksgiving. So I ask you, do you have any doubts of the commitment to continuing or at least finishing this season?
You know, Paul, we have to reflect on it, and we can't be, I never thought we should be bullheaded about this. I do think it's been worth it. But on the other hand, it's been difficult. I think you and I had some really good conversations about this earlier in the year, especially when we weren't sure we were even going to start. And I think I may have quoted Edward R. Murrow at the time. He once said, difficulty is an excuse history has never accepted. And it has been difficult, but I think we've given the kids a chance to play and to play in a safe environment. We've had no evidence, and this has, been documented by the NFL, the SEC, all of us, our conference. There's been no evidence of transmission on the field. And, whether the players who've gotten it would have gotten it outside, who knows, but they may well have, and they would not have been tested in the way they have been. The disease might not have been detected because, as it's often asymptomatic. You could have underlying conditions. Some underlying heart conditions have been discovered because of all the testing, even independent of the COVID protocols or of the COVID diagnosis. And so consequently, it's perhaps even saved some kids. I think in the end, we've been able to play safely, and these cancellations really have been a reflection of the fact that we wanted to be, extremely cautious, and our protocols are working, and we didn't want to play games that would potentially put our players at risk. And yet we have played most of them. It's been an interesting season. Obviously, some conferences didn't start, and we can talk about that if you'd like. But the point is, I think it's been overall, an experience that the kids have enjoyed. We had cardiologists talk to us, when the myocarditis issue was, a concern back in, and it still is, but, it was a very big concern early on. And they said, there's a mental health aspect to this, which we had recognized and we had talked about, and they said it's real. We have diagnosed, kids who can no longer play, and depression. If our student athletes who live for this, couldn't have done this year, and there was a way to do it, I think it would have had some real impact on them. So all in all, I think it's been worth doing. You have to live. If you can do it, safely, reasonably safely, if you can reduce risk. So, then I think you go ahead. And that's what we've done. And it's been difficult. No argument. And we knew there would be disruption. And we knew that as you got into the cold weather and you got later into the year, you might have issues. And that's why we felt, let's start on time if we can and see how it goes, and then have some weeks where we can make up some games, and that's what's happened.
Let's get to the CFP and where Cincinnati figures into it before you go. What was your reaction to last night, and do you see any path at all? And I know it's more difficult now with this postponement or cancellation.
Yeah, I do see a path. I'm pleased, of course. You have to be, because this is the highest ranking that we've had. UCF made it, to eight, in 2018, but that was really toward the very end of the season, and Mackenzie Milton's injury really kind of put an end to any hopes they might have had of going higher. I think Cincinnati has a path, Paul. I think the committee recognized they're really good. I think the eye test was important. I think they are giving our conference much more credit for being a good conference. I think it's still a P5 world. I don't think there's much doubt about that. And so, it's not going to be easy for a team like Cincinnati. As far as the Temple situation, we're not even near a top 25 team. So I'm not sure for strength of schedule purpose, I don't think it's going to hurt much. But second, A&M has just missed two games, and they may be able to make them up. But they've missed two games, and they've only played six, and Cincinnati's played eight, and they were ranked ahead. So I'm not sure it's going to have that much impact. I mean, the Tulsa being ranked, Paul, in the top 25 will certainly help, Cincinnati's strength of schedule. And when you really think about it, they played some really high-scoring teams in our league that have averaged almost 32 points a game, and Cincinnati's only allowing 15 points per game. I think this committee probably likes the fact that they have a defense that is filled with potential NFL players. Paul, an interesting statistic, try to offer something different here. Temple played Houston in 2015, and that Houston team went on to defeat Florida State by two touchdowns in the Peach Bowl. 27 of the players on the field that day played in the NFL or are playing in the NFL. And in 2017, when Memphis played the double overtime game with UCF, 18 players on the field were NFL players. And, you know, we may not get we're getting more four-star, but we may not get five-star players for the most part, but we get really good players who develop. Zaven Collins is a perfect example. I don't know if you happen to see any of that, you know, Tulsa game, yeah. The incredible Tulsa-Tulane game. Zaven Collins is you know, a 6'4", 260, runs like a defensive back. He actually covered a defensive back on one of the plays in overtime, which people overlooked. And he did not get a scholarship offer. It's almost hard to believe. He's a great kid, too. He wants to be a doctor. He's studying to, you know, go to medical school. But he's a remarkable athlete, and we've got a lot of them in the conference, Paul. So I think, again, I think the eye test is important in this particular case. I think Cincinnati clearly passes it. You know, I do think that their quarterback is one of the best dual-threat quarterbacks in the country. He has such long strides. He doesn't look like he's running that fast, but he's incredible. I think, again, the conference has a lot of good teams. It's deeper. I think one of the writers pointed out to me, I hadn't, you know, recognized it. I guess we'll have Cincinnati will have played maybe five teams, maybe even six teams that were in the top 25, and several of them were in the top 25 for a couple of weeks. Joey Galloway, I thought, was terrific on the show last night. He said, I think they should be even higher than seven. I think we could make an argument. I mean, you know, look, I respect A&M. They're a good team. I mean, they struggled to beat Vanderbilt. You know, I think Cincinnati could play Alabama and you know, give up fewer than 52 points. I mean, that's just my own personal opinion. And that doesn't mean A&M's not a good team, and they did beat Florida. You know, there's going to be a debate about that if it comes to that. You know, it's interesting, Paul, as you know, these teams above Cincinnati will, for the most part, be playing each other, and that's going to be an interesting dynamic. I just think they have to take care of business, and we don't root in our conference. But should they go undefeated, and I guess now it looks like they'll play 10 games, not 11, we'll see. One last thing I would mention, you and I have talked about this. I was pleased to see the committee give a considerable weight to the number of games played. It was pretty evident in terms of where they ranked Oregon and USC and teams that maybe hadn't played as many games. It also was clear that there were some teams in there ranked in particular spots who are P5 teams that, you know, you wonder sometimes. I'm not going to mention teams. I'm sure you've had a debate all day on this. The other thing is Louisiana, which did beat, you know, Iowa State up there and is 7-1 and lost a close game to Coastal Carolina. It's a pretty good team. You know, didn't get ranked, I don't believe. And you know, we had some other teams that maybe – I thought BYU was too low. To be honest, they're a good team. And I think BYU actually helped us in a way because the Houston game was very competitive. If anybody actually watched the game, you know, Houston dominated a good part of the game, led 26-14, led 26-21 in the fourth quarter, was down by three with 3 minutes left. That was not. And the final score didn't reflect that game at all. And Houston, as you know, Paul, this year's middle-level team in our league, they're going to be good under Dana eventually. So you know, it's the best situation we've had. We have to just see what happens now. I thought the committee's got a really tough job this year. I thought they did well for the most part. But we live in a you know, a P5 world. We know that, and we have to compete. The G5 label sometimes is tough. And I've heard writers say, well, it's a really good G5 game, or they're really the best G5 team. No, they're one of the best teams. And I think you look at their talent and you look at all those players, that secondary might be the best and deepest secondary in the country. That's just a loaded with really good players. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Commissioner, always great to have you on. Be well, and hope you and your family have a wonderful Thanksgiving, and we look forward to chatting with you very soon.
Paul, happy Thanksgiving to you and your family and to all your listeners, and especially I hope everyone stays well. And again, we are thinking of Nick Saban. And again, thanks for having me. Again, always a pleasure to be with you, Paul. Take care.
The pleasure was ours. Mike Oresko, the former ESPN and CBS television executive, now the commissioner of the AAC. We still have 45 minutes to go, and we will get to your phone calls. Again, Nick Saban is supposed to talk to the media in about 30 minutes. We'll update you if anything comes out of that. He will miss Saturday's game. Your reaction to all of that when we come back.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Back here, final hour on Thanksgiving Eve. Norman is up next in Kentucky. Hey, Norman.
Doing.
Great to have you on.
Can you hear me?
Yeah,
I can hear
you fine. Thank you.
Do you remember me?
I think I do. Where did we meet, Norman?
I think it was game day, right up top at Rupp Arena. Used to play for the Gators basketball.
Oh, I do. Yes, I remember that.
You've got connections in New York City, and I'm from Jersey City.
Yes, I remember that well. It's great to reconnect.
Guess what? I want to say this to you, Paul. You are my Phil Donahue of sports.
That's great. You are my
Phil Donahue of sports. And most people that's younger and that sort of thing, they don't know who Phil Donahue is. But Phil Donahue is the daddy.
Yeah, I'm saying he was the daddy. He was a man for a long time.
Yes, sir. And only thing I want to say, you and I took a picture and that sort of thing. And I love you, what you do.
Well, Norman, thank you for saying that. I deeply appreciate it. That's something I miss dearly right now is because of all the restrictions. We can't get out and do what we're doing, but hopefully very soon. But thanks for saying that.
Remember you and I talked about your connection with Tennessee when I played against Bernard King?
Oh, yeah. Of course I remember that conversation.
And my head coach at Florida was John Lotz.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I remember those days.
Yeah. Yeah, I know you do. So only thing, this is the first time I've ever did anything like this. I'm doing Thanksgiving alone. And I got connected with your show. And I said, man, I'm going to call my man, Paul Feinbaum, my Phil Donahue.
Hey, well, Norman, listen, you call again, you be well, and I realize you're not having a normal Thanksgiving, but you take care of yourself tomorrow. Augie is in New Orleans, Stormin' Augie.
Paul, you're more like the Morton Downey Jr. of sports radio.
Morton Downey, what a name.
Hey, Paul, did you notice that Griffiths was standing in front of a big green screen?
Yeah, and to give you a little television background... a green screen is what you do when you don't have a backdrop and you're supposed to is supposed to put something in that green screen and we didn't do it or he didn't do it.
Well, I was going to say your special effects video guys can do a lot with that, and I'm sure the Florida fans could probably go on and create like a big gator head fighting him down.
If I had it to do over again, I would have put a clown face in the green screen.
Did you notice how Jim the Surgeon from Virginia took umbrage with your stating he was from West Virginia?
Oh, man, that's like somebody
like saying,
that lives on Fifth Avenue, and I say, oh, you're from Newark, right?
Or that's like saying I'm from Little Rock. I'm like, oh, my God, now watch all the Arkansas people call. But, Paul, you know, it's Thanksgiving, and there are a lot of things to be grateful for, even though 2020 has been a really challenging year. For one, I'm grateful the election and hurricane season's over.
Oh, man.
I'm also grateful that Jeremy Pruitt is Tennessee's coach and Phil Fulmer's the AD. I'm also grateful that no SEC team has yet hired Hugh Freeze, so it gives me hope. I'm grateful to ESPN for playing all the 2019 games all spring and summer long. I'm grateful Vandy's in the SEC. I'm grateful that football season is almost over and baseball season is just around the corner. Paul Mineri, we're expecting a lot from you. I'm also grateful our game against Bama was canceled. But, Paul, you're always grateful for the things that are most personal to you. And I am grateful that my mother-in-law is moving to Texas. But overall, number one, I've got to give a big shout-out to my wife. I am so grateful that she doesn't mind going to the store alone. So, Paul, all the best to you, and grateful to you for the show. Thanks.
Hey, that's pretty amazing. Appreciate it very much. That's a great call. John is up next in South Carolina. Hey, John.
Hey, Paul. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Thank you so much.
Anyway, I just want to say that the quarterback Greg McElroy was on point for sure with, you know, it's okay to be biased, but sometimes you got to spread your wings to find out who's really a Heisman contender, and that definitely will know that at the end of the season. I mean, Kellen Mond from A&M might be the guy, but who knows? But other than that, one other thing I wanted to mention was Alabama versus Auburn caller about saying Nick Saban was scared. That's why he has COVID. That's crazy, like you said. And I think that guy had one too many CBD gummies, or he took something else. I definitely don't think Alabama would be an underdog. He's almost
yeah. By the way, the only people that purposely have gotten COVID are the ones who were part of the trial for the vaccine.
Right, right. I mean, he almost sounded as bad as the New Yorker caller that badmouthed Hugh Freeze about thinking he's God because he's at Liberty from last week. I mean, wow. I just, you know,
yeah,
I think
sometimes you just have to learn, and I have not to take stuff like that too very seriously. Hey, thank you very, very much for the call. John is up next in Birmingham. Hey, John.
Paul, isn't it something that there's still a few Auburn fans out there that seem to be clinging to hope? you know, the better story would be, instead of Nick Saban being scared, is how much did ESPN pay Nick to not coach, because it was about to be the most boring lead up to an Iron Bowl in history. I mean, it seems, you know, the line came out at 24. Since Saban announced that he wouldn't be coaching, it's going to 25. Is that not the definition of mediocre?
Yeah, I would say there have been one or two that were worse than this. I guess 2012 when Chizik's last year, and maybe Tuberville's last year when he lost 49-0. But other than that, this is a pretty bad Iron Bowl week.
Auburn has become the Nick Cage of the SEC. You know, got a few decent moments, but no one's going to give him an Oscar. You know, but. We're excited for the beatdown Saturday, and we don't need Saban not to beat this team. So y'all have a good one.
Thank you. Yeah, we have 30 minutes to go, and if you want to give us a ring, you can do so now at 855-242-7285, 855-242-7285. Again, an update. I realize on a holiday like today, people come and go at different paces. But Nick Saban is out for this weekend's Iron Bowl, tested positive. The team will test one more time. I believe that is tomorrow. So right now, the university said there has been no impact of Saban's positive test on anyone else. So that is good news. Well, hopefully it holds up. And beyond that, a lot of conversation here about last night's CFP ranking. 30 minutes to go, and we hope you'll give us a ring.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Back, and great to have all of you here. Busy show today, and let's go with Dr. Shaw next in Birmingham. Hey, Dr. Shaw.
Hello, Paul. I've got to call you on something now. I kind of agree with old Mike Griffith on the Heisman thing, and I'll explain that in a second. But you know, we always ask you about a prediction for a game, you know, on Wednesday or Thursday, and you go, well, no, not until closer to the game on Friday can I give you a prediction. Well, asking him for a Heisman Trophy prediction when the two best quarterbacks who aren't even playing much, Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields, haven't got enough, you know, inventory to really vote on them. That's a good point for him that he made. And I think if you look at the NFL draft, Kyle Trask will probably be the third, fourth, fifth, maybe. He won't even go in the top 10 on quarterback. Because you're right, he can't move like those other guys. I'm not even sure Mac Jones, if he comes out, might go ahead of him. But, you know, I just wanted to kind of back up
Mike.
Well,
let me offer this. First of all,
okay.
I had no intention of asking him about his Heisman until he brought up the fact that this Kyle Trask for Heisman was a cute story. So that led me to ask him the next question. And by the way, when you vote for the Heisman, you're not voting on who you think is going to be the best NFL player. You're voting on the most outstanding player of the year. I mean, Eric Crouch won the Heisman. A lot of players have won the Heisman that you knew were not going to be great pro players. So, I mean, and by the way, I don't care who he's voting for the Heisman, but I give a Heisman ballot every week on some of the shows that I'm on, whether it makes sense or not. I don't know, but I just made a point that I had Trask number one. If he has a bad game against Alabama, no, I'm not going to vote him to win the Heisman because I think that's the biggest game of the year. But to have him fourth or fifth right now, regardless of all the extenuating circumstances, is just downright shocking. Henry is up next. Henry, how are you?
Hey, Paul, this is Perry from Lake Placid, Florida.
Oh, I'm sorry, Perry. Appreciate the call.
How are you doing? Happy Thanksgiving to
you,
Paul.
Thank you very
much. I hope you enjoy your family tomorrow. We really enjoy your show. Of course, I'm calling from a Florida perspective. I heard a Georgia caller call in and was saying all this stuff about injuries and losing on the defensive line. Georgia's all of a sudden got all been out of shape because JT Daniels looked so great against a decent defense. We know defense is not really that good in the SEC this year, but I mean, it's like us going and saying, well, we had two of our best defensive linemen out against Texas A&M. They beat us. They beat us fair and square. We turned the ball over. We shouldn't have won the game. But to go back and say because of defensive linemen or defensive this, I mean, woulda, coulda, shoulda, you know, if Lindsey Scott doesn't catch the ball, they don't score and win the national championship. So, I mean, I think that's poor on their part. And to get back to Mike Griffin, does he lose his credibility on your show of not having a perspective that's in hate for Florida?
Yeah, I will tell you this. I don't want to act like I've never done things like that before, because I have.
you would have never done that to Auburn fans, I guess.
I've tried to do it much less now than I used to, because I think and I had a an old boss of mine tell me this. He said when I was just a newspaper columnist, but he said when the audience can predict after two sentences what you're going to write, you lose your credibility. And I think that's always a danger. I go on because of my position at ESPN, I go on a lot of the shows, and some days I walk off going, I'm not really sure I said anything, but it's better not to just walk in swinging the baseball bat at the pinata than to do it every single time and lose any degree of credibility or be so predictable. And I'm not saying I'm not going to criticize Mike. I mean, I have fun with Mike, but the trash take was a little bit surprising. Not about what he's going to be in the future.
I mean,
but,
he's been a Tennessee, covered Tennessee for years, and he was there in the 90s when Spurrier was kicking their butt and then rubbing it in, and that caused his hate for Florida. And I understand that, and I've got no problem with that. But, I mean, you've got to have a perspective that's credible instead of – I mean, look, Trask has got more completions than the boy from Alabama has attempts. I mean – come on, it's not this. It, he's got. I mean, I'm looking from a biased situation, but still, the numbers speak for themselves.
No, I would agree with you on that, and I try to be. What I do is different than what he does. I'm on a different platform. He writes to a specific fan group, but that doesn't mean he has to cater to them every day of the week. I mean, let's be honest. From a national perspective, Georgia doesn't have any relevance anymore.
Well, the door is shut. It's just like I knew it was going to happen. Kirby had the time. Florida's been down. Tennessee's been down. He's had his shot. It should have already been done. He hasn't done the deal. Now Dan's starting to open the door up. The recruiting's improving. He's worked the transfer portal. I mean, the door is starting to shut for Georgia to have the opportunity to make some kind of stance in the East. And I know that Dan's 1-3 against Kirby. But Florida's 9-22 against Georgia the last 30 years. So it's not that it wasn't going to happen. It's just that he's missed the window now, and Georgia fans are reacting in a way that I would react.
Well, listen, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. And let's check in with Dave next. Hey, Dave, you're on the air.
Hey, Paul, I'm going to take up for Mike just a little bit. I mean, hey, look, who's the number one projected overall pick? Trevor Lawrence, right? You got Justin Fields in there. You got Mac Jones in there, who's in the conversation as far as Heisman. Najee Harris, that's not like a far stretch. So, I mean, you know, you look at, see what he does. But, you know, everybody's in love with Kyle Trask and Dan Mullen. Dan Mullen, by the way, is 1-4, not 1-3 against Kirby. And who is Dan Mullen beating as a head coach? Google it. You'll be surprised to see that Dan Mullen has beaten absolutely nobody other than Kirby this year with a high school JV quarterback. Five people missing on defense, right? He wins that game. He choked against A&M, lost that game. Oh, but he beat Michigan in a bowl game last year. Dan Mullen has beaten nobody, absolutely nobody. He comes into Athens with Mississippi State, gets his teeth kicked in. He was number one in the country at Mississippi State as a head coach for how long? 2 weeks until he played Alabama, and what happened? He got rolled. So I get the Kyle Trask and the Dan Mullen. It's a nice story, just like Mike said. But what he said wasn't so far-fetched. You got four guys in there in the hunt, given the last few weeks of the season. We'll see what happens. And if Kyle Trask goes out and shows his worth against Alabama, he'll get his due. But my guess is they're going to get rolled because their defense is terrible.
Yeah, but thanks, remember Paul. Something. Thank you for the call. I mean, I wasn't asking him what he thinks is going to happen. Then I was asking him what he thinks has happened up till now, and there is a difference. And you know, right now I would vote for Kyle Trask. No guarantee I'll do that in 4 weeks. And some will say, well, how stupid is that? Who cares? Well, I mean, how stupid is the college football ranking? In some ways, it's pretty stupid. It doesn't matter. I mean, Mississippi State was number one in 2014 under Dan Mullen. By the way, they didn't even. They lost Alabama, and they lost the Egg Bowl. We are officially out of time for this program. We appreciate all of you for being a part of it. Some really interesting guests today. We'll see you right here tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network beginning at 3 Eastern.